You tuned in to the Kojo Namdi Show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. Later in the broadcast, we look at the struggle for vaccine equity in this region. But first, over 1,000 D.C. residents have now died from COVID-19. The D.C. morgue can only hold 205 people. So early last March, a decision was made to create an additional temporary morgue at a D.C. government parking lot in Southwest. Every person who died of COVID-19 in the district from April through June came through this morgue. If you're wondering why you haven't heard about it, that's because D.C. officials decided to keep it a secret. Workers there were instructed to not even tell their families where the morgue was located. Why did this morgue exist, and why keep it a secret from the public and the families of the deceased? Joining me to discuss this is Luke Mullins. He is a senior writer with the Washingtonian magazine who broke the story. Luke Mullins, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kojo.
Luke, let's start with why D.C. decided to build this morgue in the first place. What was the reasoning behind it?
Yeah, it was really an issue of capacity. You know, we had projections of a lot of COVID fatalities, and the city morgue in Southwest also has to continue accommodating the non-COVID fatalities that are happening in D.C., and then we're going to have this additional wave. So they wanted a place to be able to process the fatalities. Also, the leaders of this effort at the DC Medical Examiner's office made the decision that they were going to take jurisdiction of every single COVID fatality, which is different than the way a lot of other jurisdictions handled it. And the reason for that was because they had seen what had happened in New York, where morgues were sort of hospitals were allowed to sort of process the fatalities in their own morgues, and they quickly became overwhelmed. After seeing that happen, the leaders, Dr. Mitchell, Dr. Harvin, said, "Hey, we need to go ahead and create our own morgue, to prevent against that type of debacle."
Where was this morgue, and how was the location chosen?
So, the morgue, it was inside the city, it was chosen. There was three components. They needed it to be a city-owned land, and it needed to be big enough where they could move their equipment. There was a lot of sort of heavy-duty tractor trailers equipment like that was used to store and process the bodies. And then also they were looking for a site that could be discreet, that you could sort of drive past it and not really see it, and also that it could be secured. And in fact, the site that was used was a parking lot in the city, city-owned parking lot that, had a fence around it, and it was a chain link fence, and they ended up kind of putting some black tarp around it, and then there were armed guards outside of it also.
Is the morgue still there today?
It is there. It's what they call it, a warm site right now, meaning it is not being used because the fatality caseload is not at a level that it was in the spring that is sort of necessitating its use. But they can have that up and running in just a couple of days. A lot of the equipment is still there, and they check it regularly to make sure.
But why keep this makeshift morgue, officially called the COVID disaster morgue, why keep it a secret?
Yeah, there's a number of reasons. One, the leaders of this effort, you are experts in this field, which is known as mass fatality management. And through other efforts, they've found that these types of facilities can sort of trigger kind of a macabre curiosity, and they can be sort of gathering sites for gawkers and people like that. They didn't want that. Two, they worried that news footage could upset the family members. They didn't want, so there was a sensitivity issue as well. But also there was a more political component, that they didn't want additional scrutiny because the stakes were really high here. In these types of events, mistakes can be made. And, a body can be, released to the wrong family, which would have been really politically devastating for the city. So they were looking for as little public scrutiny as possible. And I should note that they didn't make any of those mistakes. You know, the political stakes were pretty high.
This secret morgue began operating in April. Deaths from COVID were rising, and there was a lot of fear with so much unknown about the virus. Was it difficult for the officials running the morgue to find people to do this kind of grim and risky work?
Yeah, it was difficult. You know, Dr. Harvin, who was the leader of the executive of the effort, you know, he described it as a coalition of the willing. The city had been prepared for this for the past 4 or 5 years. Both Dr. Harvin and the former chief medical examiner, Dr. Roger Mitchell, were really experts in mass fatality management. Dr. Harvin was at 9/11, and both Dr. Mitchell and Dr. Harvin were both at Sandy Hook. When they came to Washington, one of their initiatives was to create this mass fatality management program, preparing for something similar to this. So they've been drilling and preparing for this for a while, and part of that is creating partnerships with other agencies, both local and federal. To put themselves, in place for finding volunteers. But yeah, this was, they had volunteers from, they went through the trade association for the National Funeral Directors Association. They sent over funeral directors from, as far away as Illinois. There were, the Army was involved, both active duty and reserve. And there was, the D.C.'s Medical Reserve Corps was also providing volunteers. There were some students, UDC pre-med students, that were there as well.
Yes, they had to find people who were willing to do this grim and risky work. Is it true that some of the workers and volunteers at the morgue had never touched or even seen a dead body before?
That is true. They some of the Army reservists, had never, this is mortuary work. So they had some people with mortuary experience, but also people without that experience. So it was really important for the leaders, both Kim Lassiter, who was a top executive there, along with Dr. Harvin, to train these people to treat the fatalities as they would their own family. And they took tremendous pride in that, and you took great care the goal was to provide a dignity in death. To the hundreds and now 1,000 people that we lost in the city to COVID.
This secret morgue was opened with prayers from members of the clergy, Christian, Jewish, and Muslim. Why did city officials ask them to come to the secret morgue, and were they too sworn to secrecy?
So yeah, Dr. Mitchell, who was the chief medical examiner, is also a reverend, and they, for a number of reasons, they thought it was important. One was to have this multi-faith community actually see the facility and make sure that there was nothing that they were doing that was going to sort of violate any of the tenets of their faith. They also thought it was important to have this was going to be sacred ground, right? There were going to be hundreds of our neighbors were going to pass through there. And at the same time, they wanted to provide some solace to the staff that was working there under these very difficult conditions was going to be both physically and emotionally very, very challenging.
This morgue remained secret from the time it was created in April until your story was released on Monday. How did you find out about it, and why did D.C. officials decide to open up to you?
So I was looking for – I wanted to write a story that could get at sort of the scope of this tragedy. It's very different than other mass tragedies where there's sort of one specific event where you have loss of life. This we're having, deaths, thousands of deaths a day, and we've sort of become numb to it. So I wanted to get at, the scope of that. And I assumed that there was someone in the government who had to account for the loss of life, and I thought they would have a powerful perspective. So I ended up talking to the chief medical examiner's office, and so I started this probably 6 months ago, and just talking with a couple of folks there, and you know, I think they were, I think they told me because they were proud of what they had done. You know, I think that's sort of what it came down to.
Talk about Donella Harvin, one of the people right. You refer to as the first responders you never see, the ones who go where the tragedy and mass deaths occur.
Yeah, he is a remarkable guy. He, you know, grew up he's a native New Yorker, and, you know, has really been present, responded to sort of the darkest times in all of American history. He responded to the Twin Towers twice, when it was bombed in 93 and then again in 2001, as a paramedic. You know, he went on to become an academic, and he has two master's degrees and a PhD, and he ended up becoming an expert in this field of mass fatality management. And he comes to Washington along with Dr. Mitchell, and they really helped build out this
only have a couple of minutes left,
okay.
But Donnell
sure.
Harvin would always give a speech to the new workers and
right.
volunteers. Could you please read some of what he told those workers when they first arrived?
Yeah, when he comes in, he gives them this pep talk. He describes it as, there's not going to be a parade for you guys. You're not going to get discounts or big thank you signs. The work we do in silence. Not even the family members of the victims will know what we've done. There's a pride in that. There's a silent pride in that. You're taking care of someone's grandmother, grandfather, husband, daughter, son, and that's a higher calling. It's a heavy burden, but the world is watching whether they see us or not.
You know, another key player in this story is Kim Lassiter. Can you take maybe 30 seconds to talk
sure.
about her?
Kim Lassiter is a local you know, Washingtonian. She's from Prince George's County. Has spent 25 years at the chief medical examiner's office. Is now you know, one of the veterans there, and has spent her whole life attending to death victims. And as part of this specific effort, you know, she was sort of the kind of on the ground day to day leader, really hands on, you know, took incredible care to make sure
All I got to say is you have to read Luke Mullins' story in The Washingtonian, because you've gotten a lot of reactions to this story, and I'm pretty sure that people who read it will also react. Lou Mullins, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We have received a statement from the Bowser administration expressing its pride in the work of those who worked and volunteered at what we've been calling the secret morgue. We also want to take this moment to express our condolences to the mayor, who yesterday lost her eldest sibling, Mercia Bowser, to COVID-19. Got to take a short break. Proud of those workers at the morgue. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Thanks for listening to The Kojo Namdi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.